Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Let's go to our TV critic now, Jonathan Mann-Heap, who is a culture writer based in Auckland, whose writing has appeared in The Guardian, Stuff and Metro magazine. He's one of our regular TV reviewers. And Johnny joins us now. Hello.
Hi, Jesse. How are you?
Really good, thanks. I haven't come across either of these ones before, so I'm intrigued. Tell me about The Sympathizer on Neon.
Yes, Sympathizer. One of the kind of most like striking aspects of this one is that it has sort of already fallen into the algorithm soup. And it's HBO's biggest, flashiest new one, but it's kind of fallen below the radar, which is striking, considering it's a big budget adaptation of a Pulitzer Prize winning book from 2015. And it has Robert Downey Jr., fresh off his Oscar win for Oppenheimer, playing four different roles in this. So the book.
Sorry, who's
is,
playing four different roles?
Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, okay.
Yes, yeah. He co-produced the series as well, which is kind of set at the fall of Saigon in 1975, and it opens in the prologue with this quote that, you know, all wars are fought twice, once on the battlefield and once in memory. And it's set in this little period after the war about a spy from the Viet Cong who's embedded in South Vietnam, and he is whisked off to safety in America after the collapse. And it's there that he kind of has to keep feeding information as a mole from the Americans back to his Viet Cong leaders in the North. And the show sort of jumps around in time from before the war, the middle of the war, and his life kind of living as a mole embedded in American society in the 70s. And what is kind of phenomenal about the show is that it's directed by Park Chan-wook, who's the director of The Handmaiden and Decision to Leave, which is a critical South Korean film from last year.
Right.
And he's very, very formally inventive. So kind of he has this heavily stylized violence in the series. There's torture sequences and sort of hitman escapades that have kind of a Tarantino-esque quality to them. But he has this, he does violence in a way that borders on the cartoonish, but it never kind of hits you as a cartoon. It always has this kind of gut punch to it, but it has almost this kind of screwball paper quality that he does because he shoots it so fluidly and with such style. But the show is a really tricky tonal one to pull off. And I think the novel had been touted as this kind of unfilmable masterpiece. And once Robert Downey Jr. came on board and Park Chan-wook came on board, they've shaped it into this 7-episode series that's this really fiercely controlled vision of what it means to try and sort of make sense of a conflict when you're not even sure that sort of ideological conflict is actually over. And I think it's, you know, we're 50 years post-Vietnam, but there are still so many misunderstandings and still a very American-dominated view of the narrative. And this book and the series kind of reframed my perspective on the war and show that it's impossible to have 2020 vision on war in general, but particularly a conflict like this.
Yeah, fantastic. What's the deal with Robert Downey Jr. playing multiple parts? Is that just a little acting challenge for him, or is there any kind of relevance to the fact that it's the same guy playing different characters?
Yeah, I think both. I mean, I think it's three things. One, it might be a sort of riposte to his role in Tropic Thunder, where he donned blackface and portrayed a kind of Vietnam war hero in that. And this feels like him, he's kind of playing a character from each of the four corners of American power. So he plays a politician, he plays a CIA wrangler, an academic, and a filmmaker. And it's sort of a message on the fact that Hollywood has historically used Asian actors interchangeably, and here they're using this, you know, this white male actor interchangeably to show kind of, he's got this great line when he walks into a restaurant for, you know, to receive some information about a hit, and he's taking his mole into the restaurant with him, and he walks in and there's a sea of white faces and suits. And he says, you know, there's nothing, there's no more dangerous predator in the world than a white man in a suit. And so he's kind of playing the various guises of modern American whiteness. And he's great. He's really up to the task. He's very much redeemed himself after being in the Marvel universe for far too long.
And is it an accessible show, or is it quite challenging? Is it does it feel like you're watching a difficult or ambitious show, or is there plenty to kind of keep you, I guess, keep you interested and make it an enjoyable watch?
It does throw you into the middle of these four separate timelines, and I think it's sort of trying to say how hard it is to hold on to your sense of identity, you know, in a conflict like this, and how those sort of collapse when particularly you're playing both sides, like the protagonist does. And so the first episode is sort of this hour length, almost feature film premiere. But I think once you're in the swing of it, it balances the four timelines so deftly, and the scene transitions are so well thought out. And the way that he elides the timelines is you're never really confused, in much a similar way to how Oppenheimer did it, and it managed to have control, and you never felt quite lost. But it is to begin with a bit, you know, it's a heavy read at first.
Great review, Johnny. Johnny Mann Heap on TV. That's The Sympathizer on Neon. And then something which I presume is a lot lighter, Heartbreak High on Netflix.
Yeah, I was trying to find some sort of connective tissue between these two, and I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Kind of going from the front lines of war to the front lines of being in fifth form, which is it's a battle of its own. But this is a it's kind of been a global smash hit of an Australian show that's been in the top 10 of Netflix for weeks running. And I think, you know, so many teen shows have these sort of 30-year-old Hollywood actors playing 15-year-olds, and we've had that ever since John Travolta did. Was 25 going up to 16 in
Beverly
Grease.
Hills
But
90210 was the worst one, right? Remember, they're all about their
yes.
mid-30s.
And it kind of, I think what it does is slightly pull you away from the fact that you're watching 15-year-olds that are actually incredibly vulnerable and have a way of speaking and a way of being with each other that, you know, I think you really lose sight of by the time you are a 30-year-old. And I think with shows like Euphoria and these other, you know, quite prestige shows with almost Scorsese levels of violence and sex and things in them, it moves a little bit too far away from the main subject. But Heartbreak High is written by a 20-something, but has the slang and the jargon and the rhythms of speech of Gen Z sort of down pat, or so I'm told. And it about this cabal of four friends in a sort of decile one school in one of the, Sydney's inner suburbs, and their ways of accurately navigating puberty and, you know, challenging in this season a men's rights group that forms on campus on high school. And it's about how they sort of are, you know, being divided into this culture war that's being stoked by the teachers. The show just has an incredible, as I say, like dialogue, but the sort of zippy pace to it that I think is really special. It's kind of rare to have 15-year-olds look and sound and talk like 15-year-olds on screen. But I think the reason I'm sort of putting out recommending it is I think for families, it's quite a good one to bridge the gaps in lifestyle, to sort of sit down with the children and watch, because Gen Z in particular, perhaps more so than any other generation, we're often told sort of what their identities are and how important identity is to them. But this actually lets the kids tell the story themselves. And, you know, some of the actors collaborated on the script too. So there's just real authenticity to the show that's quite charming.
Love it. Thank you, Jono. Really appreciate
Cool.
it.
Cheers.
Jonathan Mahn Heap on Heartbreak High. That one's on Netflix. It is a reboot, if it rings a bell. There was a Heartbreak High in the mid 90s in Aussie, and The Sympathizer on Neon. Hold
up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.